In the past, Jesse Winchester has been primarily known as a musician's musician. One of the reasons was that until President Carter's recent amnesty for draft dodgers, Jesse was unable to personally bring his music to the American people. With his first US tour, all that has now changed. And it's inevitable that the public will acclaim Jesse in the same way his fellow musicians already have.
Do you think of yourself more as a songwriter, or a singer, or a performer, or just a total integration?
Well, when I'm feeling good and I can do whatever I want to do, I believe. You know, I feel we're all called upon to do all sorts of chores in this world, and I want to try my hand at as many of them as I can. So like I say, whatever interests me, I'll give it a try.
Whereabouts are you from, Jesse?
I'm from Memphis, Tennessee. My family is actually one of the first families there. My great-great-great-great-great-grandfather founded the place, along with Andrew Jackson and John Overton. But I was born in Shreveport, Louisiana, because my dad was stationed there during the war. And grew up in the various little towns in the South. We had a succession of three or four farms in Mississippi before we finally moved back to Memphis, and Dad took up the law profession, which he'd avoided. He wanted to get back to the land. After the experience of the Second World War, it kind of shook him up, and he was sort of a hippie maybe 25 years before his time. But he had a heart attack and had to give up the heavy labor of farming, so he went to law school at night and joined the family law firm shortly thereafter. I was still in school for the better part of the time I was in the States, so I hadn't really worked on a career or anything like that. I just sort of picked up a little extra money doing it. I wasn't a full-fledged professional until I moved to Canada, and I was sort of forced by necessity into it.
How old were you when you left?
22. I was ready for a change in my life. You know how you get it. You're ready to go, you're ready to move, and it's just gonna take a little push and you'll go. I was at one of those points, so I left after I'd been drafted. Certain parts of it were real hard, like hurting my grandfather, who was a real patriarch. His byword was, my country, may she always be right, but my country, right or wrong. I knew that my decision was gonna hurt him and disappoint him, to put it mildly, that I had to do what I thought was right.
I think I once heard you say, Jesse, that it's not the decisions you make, but how you live with them that's important. Do you still feel that's true?
Yeah, I think that's true. I really do. The people that I admire in history is not so much whether they made the right decisions or not, but it's how they dealt with them after they'd made them. If they came to believe that they were wrong, then they were big enough to admit it. And if they felt that they were right, then this is above and beyond whether or not, in fact, they were right or wrong in terms of the common wisdom of today. But anyway, how they dealt with the disapproval of the people around them, or the approval, or whatever, that's the important thing, I think.
How long have you been living in Canada, Montreal, altogether for?
10 years.
Has the possibility of a pardon always been forefront in your mind?
No, I never even considered it. Never dreamt that it would happen. Never. Well, I was so moved. When I heard that the pardon came through, I just had to weep.
When you left the States, how come you chose Montreal to come to?
Because I wanted to live in a French city. That intrigued me, living in the second largest French city in the world, and none of the other places appealed to me. I thought they would probably be just American or American-like. I still have American tastes. I still like barbecue and Southern music, and I still think that the Southern way of speech is the most mellifluous. And I know that these are all just matters of taste and opinion, but that's the way I feel about it. And on the other hand, I wasn't fully aware of this until I got back to Memphis. I'm really far gone as a Canadian. I'm a Montrealer. And it took going back there to really realize that. I'd known that I would always live in Canada, but I hadn't realized how deeply I had changed.
Did you find it difficult to make a living when you first came to Montreal? You said that you hadn't really taken up music professionally in the States, but out of necessity you were forced to take it up in Canada. Was it difficult to begin with?
Well, I was young and I didn't have any responsibilities. And first job I got musically, I think I made $125 a week, and that was pretty steady, which was good. And I didn't have anything to spend it on. And I suppose it was hard if you looked at it from a certain perspective, but really I was having a great time and it didn't bother me.
What kind of band were you in?
I was in a little bar band. We played in hotel bars everywhere. We had a great time. They were called Les Astronautes.
Did you have to dress up in costume?
Well, the end of the matter came when the impresario wanted us to dress up as real astronauts. Well, his idea of what astronauts were, which was leotards and silver lamé bikini pants and football helmets with antennae on the top. So I passed on that and found another job. The Brand New Tennessee Waltz was one of the first songs I wrote, if not the very first. And Yankee Lady I wrote maybe a year after that. And this was in 68, 69, I suppose, something like that.
And did this coincide with you leaving the group scene, so to speak, and going solo?
Uh-huh. I left the groups, and I got so fed up with not getting paid and playing in places where I couldn't find anybody to talk to that I decided I would work as a single and try to find work around Montreal. I figured I could make better money and I wouldn't have to leave town and leave my friends. So I worked up a little single act with my electric guitar, and I got a job at the New Penelope Coffee House, which was the showcase place in Montreal. This stimulated me to write new tunes, because this was more or less expected of people who played in clubs like that they wrote their own material. So I did.
How much time do you spend lyrically on your songs?
The first verse is usually easy, because that's the verse that is inspired. I mean, you can just sing anything you want that comes from the muses or wherever, your imagination. And that doesn't take any laborious work. What takes the work is trying to come up with three or four verses after that that scan exactly the same and phrase exactly the same and so forth. Then you really have to start getting in there and digging around for words that fit and so forth. And that takes some time. It's a real pleasure, you know, you come up with something good, it's a real treat to congratulate yourself, you know.
Do you like having that personal contact with an audience?
I really do, yeah. You know, you have bad nights, everybody has bad nights. But when I get it right, it's the greatest thrill in the world, and I'm working on getting it right every night. I feel very confident about the band and the music, and my own state of mind is better than it's ever been in my life. And this really has a lot to do with the music. It also has a lot to do with things that are really above and beyond the music. The things that are peripheral to it, the traveling and the hotel rooms and things like that, are a real cloud on the horizon. But that's all right. I've been working on my attitude and, you know, I'm gonna just jump that cloud.
I was listening to an interview on radio the other day with Don Henley of the Eagles. He chose one of your records to play on the air, and the comment he made was that he felt that you were the Stephen Foster of the 70s.
That's a fantastic compliment. Thank you is all I can say. I see what he's saying. I do have a sentimental and melodic nature.
But I think also what it is, it's you've written a number of songs that you hear them and you just feel that they've been here forever. I mean, just forever. You know, Mississippi, You're on My Mind, Yankee Lady, Brand New Tennessee Waltz. It's very hard to imagine that they've been written recently. Do you ever get that feeling yourself?
No, I don't. I can't listen to my own stuff. It makes me nervous. But being as accurate in my self-analysis as I can, I know that I would like to be thought of as a classicist in the sense that the songs aren't affected by fashion as much as other songs might be. I try and make things timeless. I don't want to use words that have only come to mean something the last few, like far out or right on, you know, unless it's an entertainment type of a song. Which is all right to use words like that in, but you know, you try and make the songs classic. You Remember Me turned out to be kind of a, Dave Lewis calls it a rock and roll extravaganza. I don't know whether it really lives up to that, but it's a, you know, a Aznavour dramatic type tune, and I like it.
How strong an influence on your music was the music you grew up with?
I'd say it's about 99%. I'm still dealing with the stuff that I heard as a child, really, more than I am with the things that I hear now. I'm not nearly as influenced by what I hear now as the early things. Elvis was the first person who really just turned the world upside down for me, really. And all the excitement that went on around him, all the people that were peripheral to Elvis, Jerry Lee Lewis and Carl Perkins and Wayne Smith and people like that were real big influences on me. And gospel music I'd heard all my life, ever since I was an infant. And I always loved that, and country music, of course, and rhythm and blues. It Takes a Young Girl is a B.B. King tune, or was done by B.B. King very nicely. And I was so moved by it because I'm not sure which young girl B.B. King was referring to, but to me it meant my little daughter, and The father-daughter relationship is just so special in this world and such a ray of sunshine in an otherwise bleak landscape that I was just really moved by the tune and I wanted to do it. But I'm considering taking my little boy on the road when he gets a little bit older. He's still somewhat too young, but as soon as he knows how to read and do psalms, you know, I'll take him out with me and let him learn the business like that.
Is he musical?
Jamie's musical. He knows all the notes on the piano. He knows all the words to my songs. When I'm gone from home, he puts my records on the record player and sings along with them. So he knows the words. Well, phonetically, he knows the lyrics.
Are you his favorite singer?
Well, I sure hope so. I was wandering around the house playing my guitar, and there was no one home but Jamie and me. Jamie's 5, and well, he was 4 at the time. And Jamie watched me playing and strumming and went into his room and closed the door behind him. So I got suspicious when he closed the door, and I went and listened. And I heard him saying, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. A, B, C, D, E, F, G. We have a beautiful family life in spite of the fact that I'm away so often. Leslie, my wife's got her own life. She's going to school and studying what pleases her. And everybody's in real good shape.
What do you hope for in the next year?
Whatever happens, I want to maintain my A-level head. You watch other people become famous or successful, sometimes to the detriment of their music. So if there's any way to prevent that happening, I'm going to do it. And I'd also like to get some money out of this business. I'd like to buy a house for the family and build a little studio. That's a pretty common ambition for a musician, but it would really, I think, help the records if I had a studio at home and was able to work in private more than I am now.
How is the amazing glare of the spotlight that suddenly has been focused upon you with the pardon coming through from Jimmy Carter? Suddenly you're in People magazine, there's 20-minute specials on you on television. Everyone has sort of descended upon you. How are you handling this?
I don't think it's made any big difference in my life at all. Life goes on, you know. It's not that much of a change from, I mean, People magazine is another interview. It's not a real substantial change in your life, you know. I'm still waiting on the check. Ask me then.